Have you ever wondered why a skimpy pair of underwear could cost so much? What about all the bras out there? How can such small garments be so expensive? I'm Jermaine Caprio, and in this episode of the Care What You Wear podcast, I have the pleasure of speaking with Kristen Anderson, a fellow designer of intimate apparel and a driven entrepreneur. Kristen explains why great-fitting intimates aren't cheap, but in this episode, we don't just get into your underwear. Hear what really happens when you own a clothing company. We discuss some of the everyday challenges facing a brand's owner and the vast knowledge and help needed for a clothing brand to survive. We even cover the importance of making sure your work continues to light you up. I hope you enjoy this episode. Kristen, welcome to the Care What You Wear podcast.
Thanks so much for having me.
Tell me about your backstory. Did you go to school for design?
Yeah, I did. I ended up, when I was a senior in high school, I was really into fashion. So I started making all of these skirts my senior year, and I was really unsure of where I wanted to go to school, but my guidance counselor told me, he was like, you have to apply somewhere. And I'm like, okay. And he found this college, he found Framingham State University. It was really great education. They taught me a lot about like functional design and like how things really go together. And I owe a lot of my experience in this field to my education there.
Well, I think it definitely helps to get a very well-rounded education in fashion design. That's something I never had. So I'm a little bit envious.
Yeah.
I came to the party kind of late.
You know, it's fun to learn by fire too. I think it puts a different pressure on yourself, but it's kind of like do or die, you know, when you have to teach yourself something. So I think I admire that quality too.
Well, entrepreneurship is learned by fire, don't you think? I mean, I feel like every day that's kind of the motto.
100%. It's like, what's today's problem? What's today's solution?
Right.
Where are we looking for this?
Absolutely. So how did you find yourself in the intimate apparel space?
Oh, it was kind of an accident, really. I was really looking for my first job in the industry still. I had gotten a job out of college working at a consignment store. I was like a store manager. And so I was still like touching clothes and into it, but I wasn't into it in the way I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. And I had a girlfriend who had graduated in the year after I graduated in the summer, and she got a job. I said to her when she got that job, like, hey, if you know anybody, if they start hiring for another role, let me know. I'd love to be considered. Just a couple of months later, something came up, and it was a design assistant for the most senior designer in the company. And
so did you go right into intimate apparel from there?
Yeah. I mean, that was really all they did. They focused a lot on like dressy lingerie. So they were supplying a lot of the things for like Victoria's Secret and Avon, Lane Bryant, places like that. It was a really interesting place to go because I felt like originally I had really wanted to do like party dresses, and I like loved Betsy Johnson when I was in high school and in college. And
me
so
too.
But so I had really wanted to do that, and it was just weird because when I got into intimates, I just realized how close and similar they actually were. And actually, intimates is even better because you wear underwear every day. You only get to wear fancy party dresses when you go to fancy parties, but every day somebody's putting on something that affects and shapes the way they feel about themselves. And
but it is such a different medium in design, because designing intimate apparel is a whole different animal from designing, like, you know, dresses or pants. And I remember that awakening when my contractor, I was making a swimsuit after I was making like this tank. And I remember him saying, you know, you can't use the same elastic that you used. And I was like, what? I can't? Like, I knew nothing.
Yeah. Even though swim and intimates are very similar, and there's a lot that do like kind of cross the boundaries of each other, there's still a lot of differences between them.
Yeah.
And they definitely require their own kind of finessing and intimates in general is just, it's people that do regular ready-to-wear, it's just so different because you're working with such different shapes and they're like much bigger, and it's hard because you need a special eye for it. So it's not,
you do.
It's not
you
just, do. You know, anybody from ready-to-wear can go into intimates, where I think the opposite is a little bit more true. Like if you've done intimates, like you could probably do anything because it's one of the hardest things you could make and put together, especially like an underwear bra. It's like,
yeah,
there's anywhere from, you know, 10 to 20 components, and
right,
they all have to be sewn in a certain way to make it work just right. So it's
right,
very complicated.
And most people just don't understand that. And that kind of leads me to one of the questions I had for you, which was, you know, most people can't understand why a tiny little garment like a swimsuit or a pair of panties or whatever can cost so much. Why don't you share why these garments aren't quote unquote cheap?
Yeah. So I think that's such a good question. I think everybody looks at it and they think like, oh, it's just, it's like nothing. It's no fabric, you know? Mm-hmm. But there's like a lot of labor that goes into intimates. There's a lot of sampling rounds. So a underwear, like a panty, might go through 3 to 5 fittings. A bra might go as many as 6 or 7, depending on like the characteristics and how complicated it is and what you're trying to achieve. So they're just really labor intensive when it comes down to the actual development part, but also the production part too. So they really require very skilled craftsmanship. Mm-hmm. And if you need that, then you need to pay your workers more. Just not as many skilled workers means that you're going to have to pay more for them. So
absolutely. But then you go to make it in the United States and it's a whole different cost structure, right? Like it takes it up another...
Mm-hmm.
Another,
oh, totally.
Not sure too.
And you also have the minimums too, because you have like fabric minimums. So like, because those garments are so small and because the pieces are so small, you have to use a whole lot of fabric. You have to make a lot of volume to use and consume all of the fabric that you have to order to meet your minimums. And it's a complicated puzzle. So it's like people who aren't really in the industry can wonder and be like, how can you charge that much for that? And
our minimums are 1,000 yards
per
fabric per color, and a lot of people don't realize that. And
a lot.
You know, to use 1,000 yards in a garment that takes an eighth of a yard is kind of
it's
a lot of garments. Yeah, good, thank you for shedding light on that. It's very true. So intimate apparel traditionally uses synthetic fabrics. How do you feel about synthetics now that we know kind of the harm or what they're doing to the planet? Like, what is your take on that? And then I'll share mine with you as well.
To me, there's like limited things with the synthetics that are good at the moment. Like if you can't verify that it's truly recycled from like post-consumer waste, then that kind of takes away the benefit of it. So I'm much more for, you know, organic cotton. I really like modals and cellulosic fibers. Those are my fave, probably.
Me too. And what's hard for us is, you know, we do make 100% organic cotton bras and panties, which I love. But if you want to like make them fun, like print on them and do the prints that we do and make them fun, the recycled polys, you know, they're the only things that we can print on and get like our beautiful prints on. So it's kind of hard. What I do like too, I'm athletic and I work out a ton. And, you know, if I'm out hiking or running or whatever, I cannot wear a cotton bra under my clothes because it just ends up soaking wet. Well, you just end up soaked. It's not, you know, where these synthetics, these microfibers that we've invented for better and for worse, they're great for if you're working out because they wick and absorb and you're not soaking. But it's really a conundrum, right? Because it's just that you want the look and the beauty and the fit, and yet you don't want to pollute the planet. And that's kind of where we're at right now, is we're just hoping that fabric mills catch up the need that we have.
Yeah.
And they slowly are, but they're still out of our price range. If you're someone like us, they're really expensive.
Yeah, I totally hear you on that. I think it's been a long time coming, but There's definitely like a suitable like a time and a place for a lot of those fabrics. Like you said, like activewear is a really good place for those more synthetic garments because you're not wearing it forever. You're wearing it for a purpose and it's doing its thing and, you know, it's helping you achieve something or it's like a solution, you know? So
Yeah, it's a tough one. I was wondering about your take on it. I feel like all eco and eco-friendly looks can look a little flat, you know, can look a little plain. And I know we all like a little something, especially, you know, when you're dealing with the pandemic, it's kind of nice to have if you are going to wear your underwear, you want it to be kind of, there's a little joy finding a little print underneath or something. I don't know, lace, whatever it might be. So
totally. And you guys have beautiful prints. So it's like very, it makes you feel, you know, feminine. And you definitely know how to bring that with your looks, I think.
Oh, thank you. Let's go back to your background. Because from what I've seen, you pretty much know what you're doing, my friend. You have an amazing eye. And I looked at some of the things you've done in the past. So you have a history with Adore Me, correct?
Yeah, I do. I worked there from 2013 to 2016, the end of it about. And it was like when it was really, really just starting and kind of taking off. So it was a really fun time to be there. I was hired right under the head of design. So I was like her kind of right-hand woman, I would say, for almost probably 2 years before we started hiring anybody else on our team. And yeah, it was very fast growing. I think it was actually labeled as the fastest growing fashion startup in America or in New York while I was there.
Wow. I didn't know that.
It was very fun to be part of that. And I think it kind of, I had always been an entrepreneurial person before, like even in college, I had like this little brand. I called it, Oh My Gosh, Kiki. And it was like little, handbags and jewelry and like a few different garment pieces that I made. But I think it was Adore Me though that really kind of made me really interested in growth and direct to consumer startups and building something brand new and kind of making something for the customer. So
right. What a great experience.
Yeah, I owe a lot to them. So I mean, my last full-time role was at a company called Swim USA, and so I was the lead designer for the Target account, which was Konasol. So it was like a brand new brand. When I started, it was actually Merona, but as I, you know, after the very first like half year that I was there, it switched to this new brand. So I got to help build that brand and like what the vision of it looked like. So we were one of like three manufacturers that was kind of coming together with Target to help shape what this brand looked like. So that was really cool.
That's great.
I also currently design for a brand called Mentionables, which is a really interesting concept. They don't use any models in their imagery. So all of it is very geared towards like picturing yourself in it and like flat lay imagery. And they only use mannequins to display anything. So it's very interpretive and allows you to kind of picture yourself more than just like a Victoria's Secret model, so to speak.
Right.
A little while, I also worked for about two and a half years or so. No, 2 years, I think. I worked with an organic underwear company called Nikki. So they make and produce organic panties and bralettes. And so I helped them launch their bralette collection, which was really fun.
Really fun. And refit
some of their panties. So that was a really good experience as well.
So you've had, you have quite a history and so much experience. Explain your business model now. So you are basically a freelancer or you own your own business and you advise and consult or what are you doing now?
It's kind of in a period of flux, if I have to be really honest. We, for the past 2.5 years, we have been offering like full service end-to-end design and development services to our clients. That being said, it's really not me just being a freelancer anymore. I have like a team of individuals that help me with pretty much every account that we work on. So it's become much more than just a single person. But that being said, we're kind of in transition and we're trying to figure out exactly what the next phase of this business is going to look like. I think that we'll still have some of that service-oriented business, but I think we're also looking at trying to make a noticeable difference in young entrepreneurs and trying to help people figure out how to grow these kinds of businesses from the ground up. So I'm really interested in what the next chapter is, but for the moment, a lot of what we still do is really help focus and help people build businesses from beginning to end in the fashion space, particularly in intimates and swimwear. And we you know, we do a great job designing and helping these collections kind of come to life and making sure that they fit their brand and their aesthetic and that they're always kind of evolving forward.
That's great. You provide an incredibly valuable service.
It's a lot of work to do it on your own. And I know really the business that I have right now kind of came from my first time trying to bootstrap my very first company. And that was a bra business that never really launched. And, you know, I put so much of this pressure on myself to learn everything. And I learned during that experience that you just can't do that as a business owner. So that's kind of how this business came to be. And so I really have to put my focus on efforts on helping support founders that realize that they just don't have the capacity to do everything. So they want to outsource this part of their business to somebody they can trust. And right. We try to be really good partners. You know, it's often like a co-founder like relationship where we're guiding people through a lot of the process, but we don't take any equity. So it's much more, you know, they have control and ownership. It's just they also have this partner that can help them with these like good questions that you don't want to answer alone. You know, you don't want to pick everything for your line all in a vacuum.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just picking prints for me is a nightmare without help.
Oh yeah. Prints are like the hardest probably because they're so subjective and they change so much, especially once you start coloring them, a print can be like a million different things, you know?
Right. Oh my gosh. And just two colorways. I mean, you just change the colorway or the background of a print and it's a completely different print, which is insane. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite parts about working with prints though, too. They are very transformative. Even just taking out elements here or there can do a large thing to a little.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I think the most fun part of any design business is the design part of it. But I think a lot of people don't realize when they're launching their business in fashion that part of it is such a tiny part of it.
It's so small.
I mean, I think I spend maybe 2 weeks every 6 months just designing. That's total and that at once. It's not like 2 weeks straight. It's just like I'll spend an hour here, another hour here trying to pull together the collection. And I have a lot of fun doing that. And then all of a sudden you're back to the drudgery of production and
doing the work.
The work. What have been your biggest failures since starting your own company?
I don't like the word failure.
I don't either.
Because I don't think about anything as being like a failure. I just think of it being like, that is something that I learned. And I got a really good lesson from that opportunity. And sure. I would say, you know, a lot of it is that I can't do it all. And I even still, like, I know that from my first business and I know it from this business and I know it from a new business that I'm in the process of building as well, because I haven't even mentioned that, but I'm working on my own brand in the moment as well, and I'm still even to this day struggling with letting go of certain things. And I'm like, you know, you hire smart people and then you should get out of their way and let them do their thing, because that's why you do that. And so I still have trouble letting go. And so
Well, delegating is tough. Delegating is very, very hard, because especially if it's your own business, it's kind of like your own baby. And it's letting someone sort of take control of part of the way you're raising your kid, in a sense, you know. It's really feels that personal. And I agree with you. I think one of the hardest things I learned early on was just to let go. And just to let my people kind of run with their talent. So there's kind of this fine balance. You have to know when you can let go too.
Yeah. And I think part of that is also giving people enough confidence that, like, you know, I tell my team, like, I don't expect you to get this 100% right on the first go. And you shouldn't expect to either. Like, just don't expect to be perfect right away, because that doesn't happen. It's a process. And it, number one, perfect doesn't happen at all. Like perfect is non-existent. So don't think about it like that. But you just have to understand it's an incremental game and you get small wins all the time and you just have to keep going. It's not about, you know, getting it 100% right. It's about showing up every day and trying as hard as you can to make sure that what you do matters and makes a difference in what you're working on.
Very true. On the opposite end of the spectrum, what is your favorite thing about being the owner of your own company?
That's probably got to be picking and choosing the things I get to work on, because I have a very specific scope of people and businesses that I really want to work with. So just by the nature of like knowing like whether you fit the bill or not and being able to like ask myself and be intellectually honest and say, do these people really sound like people that I want to align myself with? Or is it just going to not be the right fit later on? Like, can I solve this right now? Can I make sure it's the right fit?
Well, there's chemistry too. Don't you find with some of your clients or whatever? I mean, sometimes you just don't hit it off, and for as much as we all want to be loved by everybody, it's not always possible, right?
100%. Definitely. Like usually you know it early on, whether it's an opportunity worth continuing to pursue. Like, I feel like I either have it with you or I don't. And I don't want to force you into a position where you feel like you have to work with me. And I also don't want to feel like I'm forced into that position either, because what's right for me is what's right for you too, in a lot of ways, because I'm not going to do my best job if I don't feel like what I'm doing is valuable or I'm serving a greater purpose. So I want to always feel like that when I
I agree. It's communication. It's open communication too. And if you can't communicate with your client, forget about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that people can tell when you're not working on something that like lights you up. And I only want to work on things that light me up, that light my team up, that like, you know, just make us feel good, because I know it's out there. So it's not worth time being spent unhappy or anything. Just make sure that what you pick, you're selective about, and it lights you up.
So you mentioned it earlier. Are you designing a collection for yourself now? Tell us about that.
Yes, I am in the process of doing that. It's been under work for about a year and a couple months now. I would say that the real labor of it has started at the beginning of this year. And, you know, it's an uphill battle. I would say it's always more challenging than you think it's going to be. So it's interesting. We're kind of in this part of the process where we're really trying to align ourselves with the right manufacturing partners so that we have this opportunity to grow our business at the pace and scale we want to, but also speed up when the time comes. So we're working on a very cool technology. It's a 3D printed bra cup. So it would be it would be sewn directly into the garment. So you would never really know it's in there unless you opened the garment up and destroyed it, which I hope you won't do. But it's this really cool interior component that will stretch and flex and mold to your shape much better than a foam underwire bra ever could. And we don't need to put the underwire in it. So you can get 4 times more comfortable supports and 5 times better support than a traditional underwire bra. And there's like mathematical simulations that have gone in to prove these figures. So we can really like make these really interesting claims about how this bra will be more supportive than anything of the past. And in a really cool way too, because currently a lot of, I don't know if you know this, but foam cups that are in underwire bras, I know that's not your market, but if you were going into that market, that foam cup that goes in that bra, there's so much waste associated with it, because it's like a round shape and then they punch it out and then there's all these like scraps, and foam itself is not really all that ecological in the first place. So you've got a poor process, and then you've also got a bunch of waste, where with a 3D printer there's nothing extra. There's just, you print what you have, and you actually print less. It's very, very lightweight. So it's much different than holding like this big, thick, clunky underwire bra.
Oh, and much more comfortable, I assume.
Well, that is the goal for sure. It's it's kind of combining all of the little things that I've learned across the years of how to make things really comfy and how to make it so that they don't leave red marks and indentations on your body, and mm-hmm. just to make it as supportive as you can while also being like that super comfortable bra. Obviously, we're picking the comfy ones right now, so you must be doing really, really great in that regard.
Yeah. Yeah, we are. I mean, our bra does very well. All our bras perform there. I kind of created them because I couldn't wait to get out of my bra.
Yeah.
You know, like I hated them. And it's so funny because you take a person who hates bras and now I design them and I make sure they're comfortable. And I'm the first one to admit, I mean, there are a lot of women we can fit, but there are a lot of women we don't fit. And I don't think any bra company can claim they fit the world, you know, because uh-huh. it's just a totally. Tough, really tough space to be. I hope you're patenting this.
Yes, we are. We're in the process of like looking into how we can maintain as much of this, our ownership as possible, but we are working with partnerships. So we're Good. Trying to figure out how to maintain it from a legal point of view for sure.
Good. Oh, that's awesome. Congratulations. That's amazing.
Thank you. Thanks.
I guess that answers my last question with where you're headed.
Well, yeah, I hope that's, I mean, I know where I'm headed in the immediate future. I think minimalism in our garments is like a really kind of, I think mm-hmm. it's here to stay on some regard. So I don't think it's about, you know, adding all these bells and whistles to things to make people want them. I think it's about making what's already there even better and
right.
improving upon the best things that we have to offer, and then also involving customers in that conversation so that they feel heard. Because even as yeah. a designer, you know, like yeah. I'm being told to design all these things that I don't know, they don't really jive with me as much as some people, but
yeah. Well, COVID did that, I think. I think COVID kind of made us all go back to basics and make us realize, you know, do we really need, you know, in makeup, 10 different colors of foundation
oh, yeah.
or 20 different eyeshadows or, you know, even any lipstick. I mean,
yeah. 100%.
And I think as far as our clothing, it just kind of made us rethink our entire wardrobe. And in a way, I feel like it helped the apparel industry wake up and kind of look at what we really need. And then in another way, I think, you know, anyone who wasn't selling their party dresses jumped into the jogger market, and that was disturbing in a way. But, you know, you do what you have to do to survive. I understand. But I also, you know, think COVID, for as horrible as it was, it kind of made us all sort of go back to our roots and think, okay, why am I wearing this uncomfortable bra? Or, yeah. you know, I think it did kind of wake us up in that sense, which is good.
Totally. I think, you know, we had a long time to reevaluate and think about how we consume just about yeah. everything, you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
TV, toilet paper, food, all of it.
Toilet paper. Oh my gosh. It's been such a pleasure speaking with you, Kristen. If someone's looking for your help or for your services, where can they find you?
You can find us at our website at kndrsn.com, or you can find us at Instagram at kstnndrsn.
Excellent. Thanks. Just thank you so much for joining me today.
Yes, thank you so much for having me, Jermaine.
We hope this podcast has made you more conscious about how you're impacting the planet and that you'll visit our website, majamas.com. There you'll find our sustainable collections and links to our blog, wearemajamaseearth.com, where you can learn even more about our guests and our passion for the planet. Help us out. Follow us on Instagram and Pinterest at majamas_earth and on Facebook at majamaseearth. Care what you wear, and remember, collectively, we have the power to save the planet.